Have you ever wanted to play the perfect tabletop game, where story beats run smoothly, and there's no awkward pauses between dice rolls? Yeah, me too. But since that's impossible, I did the next best thing, and novelized my Witcher tabletop game to showcase the story in its cleanest form. The result is this podcast. I'm Jacob Gerstel, and this is Tales from the Witcher. Part audiobook, part actual play, part serialized adventure, and a whole new way to vicariously enjoy tabletop games. Welcome to the world of The Witcher, where monsters roam freely and the continent is once again at war. If you were hoping to follow the plight of Geralt of Rivia, however, I'm not going to be doing that. Instead, I offer you the story of a not-so-merry band of degenerates who are making their way across the continent. So sit back, relax, and enjoy.
Sense of Calm. 3. Carmagnola was disgusted by the state of the infirmary. It was little more than a few blankets strewn in the dirt, with ripped tarpaulin hung above it on four sticks jutting from the ground. There were at least 24 patients clustered together in the meager shade. Some slept, some mewled, and some thrashed about ceaselessly. 5 refugees, bless their souls, tried their best to help the wounded, but could do little more than force them to drink from a water skin. "This is unsanitary," Carmagnola said. He knelt down and touched the corner of a blanket, dusted with dirt and grime. He looked at the meager surgical instruments lying bare on a wooden table. He could have sworn some of the tools were rusted. "Have you no resources to improve the state of this infirmary? Not even enough lumber to build a better structure?"
Jackham, his guide, shrugged. "Brother Morgan says he spared all he could, but resources is stretched thin."
Carmagnola wondered at that. He pushed at one of the sticks holding the tarpaulin, felt it give some, and sighed. No self-respecting doctor would let an infirmary skirt by with so little.
"Are there no barber surgeons in the whole camp?"
"We had 2, but they died in the attack."
"Ah, right. Well..."
Carmagnola suddenly felt his face flush. These people needed help, after all, and no one had the skill to do so. Thank the gods he was here. He rolled up his sleeves and laid his surgical instruments on the table. He would have to make do with what he had.
"Thank you. I can take it from here."
Carmagnola quickly wrangled the 5 refugees playing doctor and showed them how to change bandages and clean wounds. Then he sent them to work with fresh supplies. He was able to quickly triage the 24 patients and started with a man who had an infected gash running down his ribs. From a spear, no doubt. He etherized the howling man and sterilized the wound in record time. Then he moved to the next patient, a woman racked with fever. He mixed her a draught that seemed to do the trick. So he went on to the next patient, and the next patient, until he ended with the least infirm, an old woman who complained of a headache. She had a light fever and said she had vomited recently. Carmagnola made her drink some of the draught he previously mixed and encouraged her to sleep. The old woman thanked him for his help. Before Carmagnola knew it, it was full dark. He stretched and wandered out into the field away from the camp, enjoying a well-deserved wineskin. He stared up at the stars and tried to look for the acrobat in the cluster of constellations. It had been some time since he'd done that, been some time since he'd felt at peace, doing what he was meant to be doing. He had been running in fear of Beatrix for so long that he had nearly forgotten what calm felt like. "Pity it's not to last," he thought, pulling from the wineskin. He flinched at the thought. And why shouldn't it last? Did he not deserve some peace and quiet after all he'd been through? Carmagnola tugged at the scarf wrapped around his scarred throat. Yes, he certainly did earn himself some peace. Carmagnola glanced back at the camp, where his companions were. "The cause of my ill luck," he thought. "Trouble follows them wherever they tread." Their encounter with the Gutter Rebellion on the River Lion had set Carmagnola on edge, though he supposed being poisoned would do that to anyone. And even after nearly being killed, he and his companions were still heading towards the heart of the rebellion in the Pontar Valley. And why? Because a sorceress told them to? Alone in an empty field, with nothing but fresh air and a starry sky and a sense of calm, the whole thing seemed foolish to Carmagnola. He drained his wineskin and tossed it away.
No sense dwelling on it now, he said to himself as he headed back to camp. If they were to do the job, Carmagnola thought, it was best to get it done quickly. 4. The town was not nearly as sacked as Jeremiah initially thought. Walking down the main street when they first arrived, it was easy to think the rest of the town was as burned and destroyed. Not so, it turned out. The outskirts of Tarnow had fared fairly well, all things considered. It would be an undertaking to rebuild, no sense in denying that, but there was plenty of material to be salvaged. The craftsmen had spent the afternoon walking Tarnow's empty streets, thinking of how to efficiently utilize the manpower he had available so he could leave as soon as possible. It wouldn't be impossible, he decided. Difficult, but not impossible. With a clear plan and organized workforce, Jeremiah estimated he would only need to be around for a week. Then the townsfolk could take care of the rest. In a way, it felt nice, walking around those ruined streets and planning how to rebuild, doing what he was meant to do. A sense of calm came with it. Said calm was interrupted when Jeremiah heard clapping a few streets over, just as the sun was setting. He sighed.
You don't need to go, he reminded himself. You can just return to camp and try to get a good night's rest. No one would fault you for it.
For a moment, Jeremiah thought he would do just that, but curiosity overwhelmed him, and he headed towards the applause. The church near the center of town had clearly been destroyed in the attack, but it appeared no time was wasted getting it back in running order. The roof and walls were a slapdash of different colored woods, but the building looked sturdy enough. It was obvious Brother Morgan had started organizing the rebuild, and the church for his sermons took priority. Jeremiah lingered near the open doorway. Maybe a third of the refugees were huddled inside, watching Brother Morgan as he animatedly preached. Jeremiah felt a sudden sense of déjà vu, and for a moment he thought he was watching Mother Lana deliver her sermons in Calmec. But Brother Morgan was far livelier than Lana. He moved with such rhythm he practically danced in front of the crowd.
Together in the dark, we are never given more than we deserve. But make no mistake that we deserved what we got, for living in idleness and sin. We brought damnation upon our heads like a hammer to a nail. In the soft years of peace, we lost sight of what mattered most, choosing instead to worship commerce. But no more! The eternal fire has brought us low, upon our knees, but only so we can rise again. Like how iron is tempered in extreme heat to make steel, so were we tempered with such hardships. The fire strengthens, and hardens, and makes better than before. Does it not?
So it does, a woman shouted near the front. Morgan pointed to the woman. His face and hair were slick with sweat.
Then why do you sit there in your idleness? Why do you all sit there and stare at me without a thought in your head? Stand! Stand! How can we serve the fire from the chair? We can't! We must serve from our feet!
Brother Morgan was practically shrieking at this point.
Stand, if you wish to save your souls!
The congregation stood without a second thought. Morgan moved through the crowd as he shouted salvation, outstretched arms reaching for his. Those that touched the cleric seemed to lose strength in their legs and collapsed to the ground, but Brother Morgan always helped them up and shook them. Jeremiah grimaced at the sudden pain in his side, where he had been shot with a crossbow bolt. The healed scar still bothered him. Jeremiah shook his head and left. The camp was far quieter and far more peaceful. Jeremiah pitched his tent on its outskirts. He had not seen his companions that evening, but he knew they would turn up sooner or later. He spent an hour writing out his plans and instructions to rebuild Tarnow, and that sense of calm returned, but only briefly, for Brother Morgan opened up the tent flap and asked if he could come inside. Jeremiah let him. The cleric looked calm and dignified. His deadpan expression returned, a far cry from the emotion he put on not 2 hours before.
I saw you at the church this evening, Morgan said in his soft-spoken tone.
I was there.
Morgan chuckled. I suppose you think it's foolish, rebuilding the church first, but such places are important for a community looking to start anew. It gives them a sense of belonging.
And could give your people shelter if you wanted, but they might get in the way of your sermons, he thought. I understand its importance, Jeremiah lied. It was a fine sermon. Reminded me of another from the church.
Mother Lana, I presume? Morgan gave his toothless grin when he saw Jeremiah's raised eyebrow. It shouldn't come as too much of a surprise. She wrote extensively of you when she... He coughed. When she discovered you in Calmec. Spoke of the great boon you'd provide the church.
of the weapons of war you create. Jeremiah couldn't help but smile. He rubbed his eyes with the heels of his palms to hide his reddened cheeks.
Good to know she writes of me, and speaks highly of my abilities, Jeremiah thought.
He looked to his bag, where Mother Lana's letters were. He would likely read them before he went to sleep tonight, as he had done every night as of late. His sleep and his dreams had been troubled recently. I trained under Mother Lana, you know, Morgan said. Before I set off on my pilgrimage years ago, she trained a number of us in the city of Novigrad.
I believe it. Your styles are not unsimilar.
She's a good woman. Morgan nodded and seemed to speak to himself. And I do wish her luck for the conclave.
Conclave? For what?
You haven't heard? Curious. Hierarch Cyrus Himmelfart, leader of the Church of the Eternal Fire for 16 years, has passed through the flames. I believe he has found peace. But now a new hierarch must be elected in Novigrad, and Mother Lana's name was thrown into consideration. She is young, but I believe she stands a strong chance. She is a most pious woman.
What are you getting at?
Jeremiah thought as he stared at the young cleric. Clearly, he and Mother Lana were still in communication. But why did he feel the need to share so much with Jeremiah?
I wish her all the success, he said. I'll be sure to visit her next time I'm in Novigrad.
Brother Morgan nodded. The fire watched over her. She left for Novigrad just in time. I've heard that Kalmek was overtaken by Nilfgaard not a week ago. Jeremiah hid his surprise well.
Well, I'm glad she's safe. Is there anything else I can help you with, Brother Morgan?
The cleric shook his head, but said softly, You don't believe in the eternal fire, do you, Jeremiah? Jeremiah stared at Morgan's impassive face, unable to decipher his intent. The craftsman was quite clear to Mother Lana that he was not one for religion, and Mother Lana made it clear that that didn't bother her one bit, so long as he continued creating his repeating crossbows for the church. How much of that did Morgan know? Jeremiah was too tired to parse out a diplomatic answer, so he went with the truth.
I have seen many things in my life, and that's made it difficult to believe in a greater power.
Brother Morgan's expression did not change. He simply nodded and said, I understand. Sleep well, Jeremiah. But Jeremiah did not sleep well that night. He dreamed that he was lying on a stone slab. Ezra, the Nilfgaardian blacksmith that Jeremiah killed in Crag Ross, towered over him, a ceremonial dagger in her hand. She plunged it into his side, right where her crossbow bolt pierced him. Jeremiah tried to scream, but the breath rushed out of him. Ezra twisted the blade and slowly ran it across his stomach. Jeremiah woke up, thankfully, before he saw his guts spill out. He clutched at his aching side and stifled a shout of frustration. 5. Ethramel Untread found his old companions, Adro and Raneth, waiting for him in his room at the tower when he teleported. He wished he could have been surprised at this, but he had made the tower a safe haven for the unsaid. Have you two nothing better to do than wait for me? Ethramel asked, dusting the ash from Tarnow off his coat. The elves' faces looked grave, and Ethramel's smile disappeared. What is it? You have a visitor, Raneth said. Been waiting for you downstairs all day.
Who?
Says his name's Colden Opteld, Adro said.
Well, fuck me, Ethramel muttered.
He had sent the Nilfgaardian diplomat a letter a few days ago, but he didn't expect the man to present himself in person. He wondered what Colden had in store for him this time. Ethramel's last conversation with the half-elf was less than inspiring. He practically twisted the sorcerer's arm so he would call off Shenny's attack on Kalmek.
You'd better let him in, then.
Adro and Raneth nodded and went downstairs. Only one person returned. A youthful man, with a strong bone structure and purple eyes. Colden Opteld brushed his dark hair back as he strode across the room to shake Ethramel's hand. It's good to see you again. Ethramel shook. Wish I could say the same. Why are you here? You wrote me a letter. Hold on, I have it here. Colden rummaged through his pocket and pulled out a piece of parchment. Saying that you have information about Edernian soldiers gathering near the Mahakam Pass into Temeria, near Mount Carbon. Colden ran a finger down the letter. In exchange, the Scoia'tael in southern Edern are to be treated kindly, resupplied, and given rest. He folded the letter and gave his most charming smile. I kept mind of the bargain.
Did you now?
Indeed. I turned a blind eye to the squirrel commando that left Kalmek not long after you, and I told the Nilfgaardian soldiers here to stay away from this tower, and I'll arrange for the kin staying here to be well supplied with food. Is that good enough for you? Ethramel pretended like none of it mattered to him.
I suppose. And now you're here to collect your reward. I'll admit, I didn't expect you to stop by personally. Colden shrugged. And why not? Kalmek is finally under the Imperator's protection, so there was little reason for me to stay any longer. Kalmek has fallen? If that's how you want to describe opening its gates without incident, then yes. Ethramel saw what Colden was getting at. So now you're free to head south, towards the Mahakam Pass, perhaps. Earn some glory for yourself by smashing an Edernian force and opening up a clear route to reinforce the Western Front in Temeria. Colden's purple eyes glittered. Are all your thoughts so cynical? Every single one. But I'll keep mind of the bargain. 500 Edernian soldiers have gathered at the mouth of the pass near Mount Cobbin, led by one Duke Haggard of Mulderwood. I imagine it will be difficult to hide a force that size, so they'll create proper defenses and dig themselves in. I'd recommend you bring at least twice as many Nilfgaardians and prepare for a possible siege. Your advice is taken under consideration. Thank you for the intelligence. An uncomfortable silence hung in the air, as Colden Op Teld seemed to just stare at Ethramel. The sorcerer tilted his head and said, Is there anything else? It never even crossed your mind, Colden said slowly. But why would it? It was so long ago, after all. Ethramel wished he had brought his elven falchion with him. If Colden decided to attack, all Ethramel had to defend himself was his staff, and a number of spells at his disposal, he supposed. At worst, he could always teleport back to Tarnow. But for the moment, curiosity compelled. What was so long ago, Colden? When you were with a woman named Alinda. But I suppose it would be difficult to remember every streetwalker you bedded in Sintra. My mother, on the other hand, remembered you vividly, and said you were quite the profligate. Understanding slowly dawned on Ethramel. Are you saying... Colden nodded. I'm your son. For one of the few times in his long life, Ethramel's mind went blank. He simply stared at Colden, trying to find any family resemblance. There was the dark hair, of course, and Ethramel supposed their faces looked somewhat alike, but that didn't prove anything. Colden could have been fathered by half the elves on the continent based on just that. How old are you? He asked after a moment. 87, Colden said. Ethramel rubbed at his scarred face. Had he been in Sintra 88 years ago? It was difficult to say. He had spent so much of his life in a drunken haze, flitting from one kingdom to the next, outrunning debtors and his own sense of responsibility. And he had bedded many whores back then. That much was true. Ethramel wondered, with horror, how many bastard children he could have running around the north. I understand your shock, Colden said, but it's simply... I don't know if you're my son, Ethramel said. No, Colden said sadly. I suppose you don't. But my mother never forgot you. I knew your name growing up, and how you looked, and always kept an eye out for you. But you were elusive. Imagine my surprise when I heard from the assassin Luthli that she's hunting an elven sorcerer with the same name as my father. What do you want, Colden? Ethramel said sharply. You must want something if you're telling me this. What? Colden looked surprised. Is it not enough for me to want to meet you? You already met me in Kalmek, and were surprisingly mum on this subject. Why didn't you bring up a family connection then? I kept quiet in Kalmek because I wanted to see who you are, and what you're like. Sad to say I got a real good image. Why should I believe you? That's your choice, Colden said, but it's true regardless. Ethramel's patience was reaching its limit. What do you fucking want? The same thing I've always wanted, Colden said quite calmly. I spoke the truth to you back in Kalmek. Our people need a home, with strong leaders who won't bend to the Dwan like they do in Doblathana. For fuck's sake, I want you to do something good for once in your damned life. Surprisingly, these insults did not reach Ethramel like he thought they would. He felt his mind retreating, where no words could cut him. He was practiced at this, and used to the sensation. It comforted him. And how, the sorcerer said slowly, do you plan on doing that? Soon, all of Edirne will fall to Nilfgaard, Colden said, and when that happens, Doblathana will be surrounded. To do with as we please, Ethramel said, so long as Imperator Emir gives his approval. It's a thought. What do you think of it? I think you should go away, Colden. I need some sleep. We'll talk more in the morning. Colden nodded and headed for the stairs. I know this comes as a shock, but I'm telling the truth. Sleep on it. But know that I'm not going anywhere, Father. I'll see you in the morning, Colden. The moment the half-elf left, Ethramel created a portal and returned to Tarnow.
That'll do it for this episode of Tales from the Witcher. This podcast is written and produced by Jacob Gerstel. The Witcher novels are by Andrzej Sapkowski, The Witcher games are by CD Projekt Red, and The Witcher tabletop RPG is by R. Talsorian Games. The music is by Eric Matias at soundimage.org. Be sure to leave a rating and a review, and to spread the word of this podcast far and wide. You can follow the podcast at TalesWitcherPod on X or at talesfromthewitcher.buzzsprout.com. Thanks again for listening, and I'll see you again next week.